Welcome to the Empowered Badass Breeder Podcast, hosted by Jeanette Forey, the podcast that's elevating the way the breeding profession is done by not only changing breeding from bad to badass, but healing hearts and changing lives through the power of a dog. Each week, Jeanette is taking hundreds of breeders on this mission and journey with her. She's sharing her secrets related to breeding, puppy curriculum, and evaluation techniques while focusing on promoting ethical and dog-centered breeding practices, while also educating the public to buy smarter to defund puppy mills and ill-intentioned backyard breeders. Our dogs deserve more. Now, without further ado, here's your host, Jeanette Forey.
Welcome to a Saturday sit down where I am here to answer your questions as best I can, of course. I'm going to start today with just going over our oath. We have so many new members, some of you attending live for the first time, which I'm so excited about. Let's just review the oath, and I'm just going to kind of explain, you know, what that means to us, because I definitely, you know, if you've been following me long enough or even new, reading the guide or watching videos, I'm not so steadfast and rigid that there's only one right way to do things. And if you don't do it my way, it's the wrong way. That's asinine. We all have our special gifts to bring to the table, but we also have to have the same standards, if that makes sense. So let's go over the standards and then just talk about how that will apply to you and molding that around your program and what's best for you and your puppies. That's so important for me to make that note. All right, our 10-step oath, 10 things that we all will live by. This is what unites us. This is what creates our vision and our mission and our purpose and that alignment. You know, my ultimate goal is that we have the same verbiage, we have the same standards, that it becomes just very common day that people just say, you know, we want buy from a badass breeder, and they know what the heck that means, what they're getting. I'm fielding more and more phone calls from people contacting me that have looked at your programs and want to know more. So this is really exciting though, you know, but the problem is they're contacting me and say, well, are they really aligning to you? Are they really doing what you're doing? I'm not here to put a thumb on you. I'm not here to be compliance. I don't have time for that. That doesn't serve me to be the police. So all I can ever tell people is go ahead and do your due diligence. But it is my hope that if they're in my group, if they are posting on their website, if they're posting on their social media, that they are following my program, that this is their program too, that they are doing these 10 things. Okay. So the closer we can get to that, but also knowing you have your own hand in this, your own methods as well, but this is still very aligned. Okay. Number one, the first of the oath, plan your litters, have a goal of focus and a mission. Do not overpopulate, only meet demand with supply. Also with that though, it's very interesting how much the media's agenda is that shelters are so full. The adopt, don't shop propaganda. Shelters are so full. Actually, we have less dogs now than we've ever had. That is absolutely not true. We don't have a surplus of dogs right now.
I have a question. I've heard that, and this is what my mentors told me, which is that I've experienced it now too, that my contract worked. I put it in my contract. If anything happens, you bring the dog back to me. And she did. And I rehomed him to a wonderful home. She, you know, it didn't work out. So, and every time I hear that, I'm like, we're not the source of that because we have very strict contracts, right?
That's right. And that's part of our oath as well, that we stand behind the dog for the life of the dog. This should become very common. It should become very well known that everybody knows breeders take back their puppies. The fact that it's not, the fact that people actually take them to a shelter, that's a problem. And it's not from us. I know that, you know that, but we have to fix it. We're left to fix it because nobody else is. There's been no movement or change with puppy mills, with shelters, with the propaganda. And I hope before I die that there is. I am so passionate about it, that breeders are looked to as professional, that people know it's just common day. It becomes part of our culture that puppies go back to the breeder if there's ever an issue, whether they're 16 weeks old. I've had puppies in the home for 24 hours and come back. It's okay. Like, I'm not going to make them feel horrible about it because I want to create this culture, this standard, that that's exactly what should happen, period. For whatever reason, why, I'm not here to judge, just give me back my puppy because that's what I do.
Yeah, she said something like, oh, my landlord wouldn't let me. And I, in my head, I'm like, you probably could have thought about that before you bought it, but I didn't. I wasn't judgmental. I was just like, that's fine. Bring him back. He was already, he was 16 and a half weeks old. I had no problems placing him in a better suited family. It worked. The contract worked. They worked. The contracts work. I mean, I can't speak for every breeder. Everything you're saying, I'm just like, yes.
But any breeder in my program, this better be part of your culture. And you shouldn't make people feel bad about it. Because once we do that, then puppies won't come back to us. And there's a reason why so many don't. People are like, oh, what? You really will take your puppy back? Okay, that is really sad. But what's happened is too often, you can't get a hold of the breeder. They ghost you. They're rude. They say, too bad, your problem. And that has been a problem. Not from good breeders, for sure. Like,
happened to me. Breeders, happened to me.
Yeah, happened to you. It's happened to me. Our good breeders have been doing this for a very long time. They have. But it needs to really start becoming part of the culture and not isolated. All right. Number two, parent standards. We have to have common parent standards. We breed only health, temperament, and structure tested parents. Do not overbreed or breed dogs that fail to meet these standards. Choose breeding pairs that accentuate each other in health and temperament. Look, there's no perfect dog. You have to get that out of your mind right now. I get so many private messages from you, God love you, that you're panicked because something's not perfect. There is no perfect dog, but what we get to do is look at the science, look at things holistically, look at everything together and make the best decisions. Now, that doesn't mean ignoring failing, you know, health testing or something that's really a problem, but it means knowing everything's not going to look perfect on paper. There always could be something. So you keep that in mind and you choose a mate that will exude the excellence in both, right? Does that make sense? So if I have two fair hips, OFA hip, two fair, fair's passing. And this is not even a discussion about why so many people throw a fit about fair. Damn it, it's passing per OFA. So that's passing. So I have two fair. Now, if they're larger, I won't breed two fair. They're larger dogs. It is the lowest passing. This is my reputation. I'm doing the best to improve the breed, right? These are the conversations that go on in your head. This is what should happen. Not, I need to release this dog because it's fair, right? No. So then I would choose a fair with a good or an excellent. If you have a DNA carrier or something, you breed with non-DNA carrier. You just look and find the best possible fit, have your litter and see what happens. And make those decisions and take that time to be like, did this litter meet my needs or my standards? Did this litter accomplish what I wanted to accomplish with them? Were they healing hearts and changing lives? Were they doing, you know, whatever, if you're doing hunting dogs, did they excel? If you're doing confirmation and show, did they excel? And if not, then rethink that pairing. Don't breed those two again. But it doesn't mean one of them needs to be removed from your program unless you start to see a problem. And then many times you may have to, let's not breed those two together again. Let me try this female with a different male and see if I still see those issues, kind of thing. As long as it's not something serious, right? Okay. And the other thing too, people ask, there's not a set list. I am not giving you a set list of this is what has to be done for health testing. I am trusting you as freaking professionals that you know your breed and you know what needs to be done with health testing. If you're new and you are unsure, that's okay. Go to AKC. They have a beautiful list of every single breed and what they feel health testing should be done. Those of us doing hybrid mixes, we have to then play this fun little game of, for example, I do golden doodles. So golden retriever testing for my purebred golden retrievers may look different than my poodle testing, may look different from my golden doodle testing, which looks different from my cavalier testing. They're all different because I am focused on the breed specifically and doing the best for that breed. So I cannot tell you this is what badass breeders do. This is the testing required. What I will say is everything that we can possibly do with an absolute reason should be being done. DNA is easy and it's fairly cheap. Run the damn DNA on them. I don't care if you want to do Embark or Paw Print or whatever. If there's no hip issues and it's very common amongst your breed standard, then don't do hip. There's some that you don't do hips. Like to me, I'm like, oh my God, I can't imagine not having to do hips because it's so huge in my world, in my life. But know your breed and make good decisions on that. Okay. Number three, parent care. Honor and respect them. They did not choose this life. you know, my parents are just absolutely honored. They are royalty here. Anything they need or they want, they are given. It's the utmost care. My program, the money goes back to my parents first and foremost, right? So when, you know, we get our profits at the end of the day, it goes back into my parents, whatever they need. And we don't bear any expense for that. So making sure that they're well cared for, my dams and my sires, especially those that live here, and keeping them healthy and happy, providing a safe, enriching environment if they do live with you, with high quality vet care, with appropriate living quarters, with high quality food, with all of those things, really, really, you know, I just can't say it enough. And I know that I have this conversation quite often, but they didn't choose this life, right? We chose it for them. And so keeping that in mind when honoring them and making sure that we're doing what's best for them too, having that conversation and evaluating often, is this still the right place for this dog? You know, or is this still, is my female really truly enjoying being a mom? Is this the best thing for her? Is it getting time for my sire to retire? He's paid his dues, you know, that kind of thing. Having those conversations and making sure that we're making the best decisions for them. You know, sometimes it's as simple as, and it could go either way. I've had it go either way where even evaluating dogs that live with you, maybe they'd be better in a guardian. They don't, you know, for us, they don't do well in a kennel environment, maybe, despite all that we have for them. We have two swimming pools and activity centers and agility centers and full-time staff. Some dogs just have not done well. So then rather than just be like, oh, I got to remove them from my program, I start to problem solve because I love this dog. They're fully health tested, whatever. And so maybe a guardian home is best. And so we put them in a guardian home. I've had dogs in guardian homes that didn't do well in guardian homes, and the coming back and forth was really difficult for them. So then it is, and I've learned a lot from that on how to choose breeding stock that's going to go back and forth into guardian homes. They cannot be tenderhearted. They have to be a little more independent, and they do well. Those very Velcro tender puppies cannot, man, they just don't. I've tried because I personally love those dogs, but they fall apart. The anxiety, and then they finally get comfortable with us, and then they go back home, and they just have a hard time. It's just not fair. So finding the right dogs first and foremost through evaluations and thinking about what their life is going to look like and honoring that right away. But if that information wasn't given to you, sometimes the guardian home situation is not good or best for them, and they come back and they live with me. So I'm always keeping that at the forefront of what is best for them. All right, puppy curriculum. Provide a structured curriculum to ensure that puppies learn the world is safe, people are kind, dogs are friendly, all that foundational work. It's not that, oh, I put them in this little play yard for 20 minutes, I'm done. It's about getting in there and working them. It's about guiding the emotional responses and not with food. Please quit luring these puppies with food. We are missing such a critical time to build this foundation with these puppies that we're blowing it if you're using food to lure them at this age. It will come. The time will come, but not early. When we're just setting this foundation of work with me, trust me, mutual respect, we work together, this innate bond. You know, so many of my clients, like, this is the best dog we've ever had. They just don't understand what in the hell I did. Like, why is this dog so innate? Why is this dog so amazing?
And I have a question about this, because when I first started immediately with puppy culture. And I noticed, now that you bring this up, they very early on encourage using introducing treats and food. And what you're saying, I've noticed differences now in between those. And I'm wondering if that's what you're referring to. Because it seems to me, I've found that what you're saying makes a lot, I've seen much better results.
Yes, I feel the same way.
Okay, good. So, okay, all right.
Yeah, I am completely humbled by what, you know, even when we talk about evaluations, what Wendy Volhard did. She gave us common language. She gave us a focus. She gave us something that most breeders could do, you know, kind of dummy-proofed puppy evaluating. But as things progressed, there were so many things that I found. I did the Wendy Volhard forever. And then I started doing it alongside mine and comparing and tracking data. There's lots of things lacking. We can do better, right? But I absolutely love what she's done. The same thing with puppy culture. God love them, what they've given us. They've given breeders. They've given us, you know, I've never actually personally used it, I'll be honest, but they've given breeders something to do and when to do it and how to do it. I devised my curriculum based off being a teacher. I didn't even know there was one. When I started doing it, there wasn't that. So I started learning about puppy development. And then my focus was, you know, my first litter I raised, I have to be able to choose a puppy from this litter that will work in my classroom. And being a service dog trainer prior to that and having a therapy dog prior to that, my focus came from that working backwards. What do I need to do to meet these needs to get these puppies to be able to meet these kind of demands? Because it was difficult for me to find in breeders.
This is why I like you, because I had the service dog. I needed a service dog. And so all I knew was puppy culture. That's all I had heard of. And so when I heard about you and I started doing things differently, I don't have anything bad to say about puppy culture, but I think your system worked a lot better.
Thank you. Yeah. And you know, whatever, and I want people to feel fine. Like I don't have any ill feelings with people. I see so many people post, we're raising our puppies the PC and the BAB way. I love it. Do what's right for you. There's a lot of people that have loved it. They love the way it's set up. They love the handouts in it. Great. But I am telling you, you will see without a doubt a difference in your puppies if you make some of these distinct critical changes in the way you're working with your puppies every day. And not luring with food is one of them. And empowering is another. And creating that relationship with them from the very beginning, it seems so simple and stupid. Here I am sitting here saying, hold them close to your heart, hold them close to your face. But this is so foundational to creating these puppies that do what we need them to do. When we build them up and get them to believe in their own abilities and empower them, these are the dogs that then turn around and truly heal hearts and change lives. Like I cannot, my program is proof of that. So I was saying before, so many people say, how the heck, how did you raise this dog? We've never experienced anything like this. This innate ability to connect with me, read me, so trainable, so focused. This is how. It's not that I had sprinkled special fairy dust. It's not that I have found this secret pedigree that I have. No, it's not. It's the way in which I have raised my puppies from the very, very beginning, every single day, every single interaction. And I think we get lost in this. We just need to expose them, right? Just expose. Desensitize. So we're thinking that, no, we need to be thinking, build a foundation, respect and honor and trust. Watch and guide emotional responses. When puppies aren't ready, don't push too soon. And then there's certain times, once we hit 6 weeks, now we really need them to accomplish it. But if I have to modify something to get them to believe in their ability, this is powerful. And this will give them their lifelong tools when they go out in the real world of startle recovery, of looking to humans out of trust instead of fear because they were pushed incorrectly. All of these things really, truly make a difference. Okay. So that's the huge difference in our program. I don't care if you do water bottles or bridge or steps and tunnels or whatever. I give examples of, you know, just things that I felt were important and I focus on. I've got a mini class all about curriculum too and working them through that. And I show examples, but what we really focus on is tactile, overhead awareness, sounds, movement, unpredictability. The other thing too that you have to remember, I cannot stress enough, you cannot work your puppies in the same area every day. And I know we don't have a lot of space, right? Like most of you are in your homes. I've done it. I've lived that life, shared my home with my puppies. But you cannot just expect to have a beauty, and some of you do. God, they're just gorgeous setups. And you've given up your whole dining room. You've given up a whole bedroom. You've given up half your front room. I know what that means. They're noisy and they're stinky and it's constant cleaning. That's the reality too, right? And then they start becoming, like Pavlov's bell, they start knowing the minute they hear you come home or the minute you get up in the morning and flush the toilet. There's a know that you're coming. But what you have to do is you have to work them in different situations. So whether it's the front yard, a different room, the bathrooms, I've seen people be so incredibly creative. They have them in the shower. Because think about how different that's the everything, the sound, the echoing, the smell of a shower. Like seriously, put in your walk-in shower. That's curriculum. Boom, take pictures. Talk about we're creating resiliency, right? we're creating this puppy that every time I put my puppy someplace or ask them to do something, like they're so conditioned in a beautiful way by the time they go home, they just know, like, what are we going to do? Tell me what you want me to do. I will please you. I will do whatever you ask. I trust you. I want to work with you. And that's the way I send them home. And people are like, they train so easy. They're like, thank you for kennel training and potty training this puppy. Shit, I don't kennel train. I exposed to a kennel. I'm not sitting with all my litters in a kennel, listening to them scream all the time. I'm teaching them the tools they're going to need so that clients can do whatever they want to do. Number five, puppy development. Guide, shape, and mold puppies based on critical learning periods, constantly evaluating and adjusting to strengthen confidence, nerve strength, and startle recovery. Empower puppies to be the best they can be. Don't be moving our puppies at 3 weeks old. Don't be moving them rooms yet. Don't be moving spaces yet. Don't be taking them too far away from their mother yet. They are not ready. I've seen more breeders ruin their puppies at 3 weeks than any other age. We do. We get so excited and we're ready. They're communicating. They're interacting. They're mouthing. They're up on all fours. They can move forward and backward, right? Between 3 and 4 weeks. So we get so excited. We have all this curriculum that we have in our closet ready to use. We bought new things we can't wait to use. And we push too soon, too much.
I, at 3 to 4 weeks, move them into the extent, like the weaning pen extension.
That's fine.
That's as far
and
as
they got their mama still. Yep, that's fine. Small adjustments like that, absolutely. But taking them away from their mom and putting them in the backyard with water bottle, you're destroying your puppies. Yeah. During a critical time that then sometimes we can't fix. They're so tenders still, right? They don't have the capability to manage that kind of stress and change. So I want to build appropriately. It's just like,
you scared me for a second. Cause I thought, Oh no. So, all right.
I've seen people pack 3 week olds out in public. We're doing exposure work and the puppies literally like shake. Right? It's insane. No, my puppies are still under a freaking lock and key at 3 weeks old. It is brief. It is short. It is mild. It is predictable. Mom is given to them right away, sometimes with even the items in the box still. If I had any issues, if I had puppies shutting down, I'm going to bring mom in. I'm going to leave the item. And then, of course, as soon as boobs come, they don't think of anything else, which is great. And then I leave it in there for a little bit, remove it. If a whole litter breaks down, and it's a beautiful thing, too, when you start to see when it's the whole litter, that it's definitely a genetic thing, right? And then when you have repeat breedings, those of you that have, I already know, like I got to delay 2 days, push everything back 2 days on the calendar. Oh, this is Hannah's litter. Push everything forward 2 days. They will be ready. Like it's such a beautiful thing to be able to do that and know your puppies. I love repeat litters for that reason, but then I also love my first time litters because it's just, you know, fun and I'm curious and I can't wait to see what's going to unfold and how quickly they're going to work or if I'm going to delay curriculum or, you know, all of those fun things. Have fun with it. All right. Puppy evaluations. This is, those of you that know me, this is non-negotiable. Non-negotiable. You cannot be a breeder and place puppies without honoring and giving your puppies a voice, period. You are doing them disjustice and you're not helping your clients as well. So quit letting people pick your puppy at 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, 7 weeks old. Vet clearances better be done. What if you have a heart murmur? What if the puppy dies at 4 weeks? Now your first pick, what are they gonna do? Or your first pick picked that puppy, now the puppy's dead. It makes you look crappy. Like I know things happen, they're out of our control, but protect yourself, please. Nobody picks until evaluations are done and vet clearances are done. People come in person if they can, however you want to work that. On the day they go home, then I collect payment, I hand them their puppy. Here's your vet clearance. They were given all of the puppy evaluation information prior to even coming here. This is how professionals do it. I know it's easy. It would be so much easier if they could just go ahead and pick your puppy at 2 weeks. Here's a picture.
I always have questions. I wholeheartedly agree with this too. Also, I'm wondering if it's also because I found it a lot more successful to wait until I could assess their personalities, match them with the right people as well as the health and, you know, there's fading puppies. There's all kinds. I was too afraid to even start waiting lists until I knew everybody was, I didn't even want to, like guarantee anything like that. But even more same importance as that to me was also being able to assess their drive levels there, because I have Australian Shepherds, you know, drive levels, temperaments, to the right family, to the right individual, which you can't tell that at 3 weeks old, you know, sometimes, I mean, or especially when they're born, it's like, oh, I just want a red Merle with blue eyes. And I'm like, but what if it's not?
That's fine. So I get those clients too. And I tell my clients, I want you to get everything you want. So if you want the blue Merle male, then you just have to be flexible and patient with me. Are you willing to do that? If you're willing to do that, I'm in. If you are in, that's the conversation you have. Let them know. It may not be the next litter. It may not be three litters from now, because don't know.
That's true. Yeah. But is it okay though, that I make personally, I just prefer to wait until I've assessed everybody to be able to match them. I mean, and it's not like I forced a certain puppy on them. It's still up to them, but I give them all the information and I'm like, listen, you said you have kids. This one, amazing with my 2-year-old deaf niece. As soon as you said you had kids, I thought immediately Jagger for you. It's just my recommendation.
People count on us to do that. Clients count on us to do that. We're here to guide them. I honestly, and for 10 years and how many puppies we have produced, being upfront and honest, giving everybody on the list every video of every puppy, even if I already technically chose the puppy for service dog work, but I'm sitting and uploading them all and I already know, okay, that's my puppy. So I'll send out the evaluations with the scorecard and the score interpretation sheet, and I'll say, first pick has been done, puppy evaluations. I want them to see. They still get that puppy's evaluation. I want them to see why I picked them. So they know it wasn't because it was a certain color or gender, that temperament is important. But absolutely.
And I mean, I said to him, you know, like, oh, I know you really like Tommy or whatever. He's so pretty or whatever. But here's what you need to, he's very high drive. If you want to commit to extra, you know, training and keeping on top of that and all of that, you know, an exercise, he's going to need a lot more. He's much more high drive. I'm not going to, I'm not here to tell you, no, you can't have it. But I'm trying to tell you. And he went with my match and they couldn't be happier. So.
And that happens too. And then I have people that absolutely pick against what I recommend.
Oh, no.
It's fine. It happens often. And I do not recommend this puppy because, and I tell them why. And I say, however, if you're very set on this, here are your considerations. You're going to have to get up an hour early. You're going to have to exercise more. You're going to have to provide more mental stimulation, whatever the issues are.
And at least you've told them. Yeah.
That is huge. I will never be one, unless it's a service dog pick, to tell people who their puppy is. I think it's incredibly powerful for people to choose their own puppy, and it's a huge buy-in.
Yeah, it was a fun thing for me. This happened on my last go home.
They have an autistic child and one little child. Both are young. They picked the most drivey. She was intense with toys, high energy, assertive puppy. I would have never matched that puppy with them. We went round and round. And I just
I think I read about this. Did you post about this?
I might have. I don't know. So I don't know. And then we went round and round, and it came down to, she goes, you know, and then I always say, why don't you guys talk about it, and I'll be back and check on you. And it came down to it is, you know, she's like, Jeanette, I know what you're saying, but I've trained lots of dogs myself, and my poodle I have at home is very similar to this, other than she's really independent, wants nothing to do with the kids. And we love that personality. We love the driving personality. Like, that's what I love. Okay, good.
So it's more about like an open discussion and making sure that you as the breeder just give them the information and then let them.
I would have made her take home the puppy that I would have recommended. She would have been sitting home pissed. I mean, really, this isn't the puppy I wanted. Now it pooped on the floor. Now it's not playing with my kid. I mean, that's just human nature, right? It is. When you're told you have to do something and it wasn't what you wanted, I don't care how much they trust me. I probably could get away with, here's your puppy. That's not the kind of relationship I want with my clients.
So now I feel a lot better, because I'm basically, everything you're describing is what I did. Now I feel like less weird about it. Okay, good.
It's my job to be the voice for my puppy. And I was. I absolutely was. And I also, it's my job to make sure my clients get what they want. But I am not end all be all. I can't pretend to think I know everything about that client. I thought I did. And then here she comes out with training dogs my whole life. I've had German Shepherds. I'm like, oh, wow. You're fine. You'll be fine.
Oh yeah. Jeremy, oh yeah.
Autistic child, you know, and she's, it's been fine. No complaints. If I would have sent her home with another puppy, I bet I would have been texted every day. About things you didn't like about the puppy. All right. Puppy evaluations, super important. You have to wait till at least 49 days old. That is Wendy Volhard's number. Up to 52, 53. Smaller breeds, you have to wait a little bit longer because it just takes them a little bit longer to develop and kind of get the more stable traits. I have evaluated younger than that. At 6 weeks, we start to see who they are, but it's just not quite as accurate. I will still see changes from the 6 weeks to the four. That 1 week is still huge, and it's huge in my curriculum, and it's huge the way I adjust a little bit and the way in which I work them. That is also, I can get a lot of progress with the puppy in that 1 week and see a difference in evaluations. I've played a lot with, I will evaluate the litter at 6 weeks and just keep my videos and keep my scorecards and then evaluate again at 7. While a lot of it is very similar, there have been some distinct differences, enough for me to say I will absolutely wait till at least 49 days. Because believe me, I'd love to get them done at 6 weeks and get them out to the clients and start getting all that done. It's tough to wait so close to go home. People get a little anxious. You have to talk to them right away and say, the week before go home is like finals week. Everything is just fine. You're getting your videos, you're getting pictures, and all of a sudden, bam, you're getting a lot of information with me. Here's vet clearance. Here's evaluations. I need official pick information. Are you going to be here in person to take home your puppy? Am I calling you? Am I boarding? What am I doing? Like that last week, I tell my clients, you're going to hear from me a lot. You've got to be watching your emails. And then they're ready for it. Then they understand there's nothing going to happen, so they don't have anxiety until after, you know, 7 weeks old. All right. Number 7, lifetime responsibility. We talked about, you take 100% responsibility for every puppy you produce for the entirety of its life. Really, you know, and I'm not a huge stickler. If you only have a 1-year guarantee, you have a 3-year guarantee. I
have a lifetime guarantee. Fair.
Yeah. Or lifetime. Yikes. That's brave.
In terms of,
it's genetic.
I won't get into it, but okay. Yeah, it's a specific thing. Yeah. But okay. I mean, lifetime, especially in terms of if you need to return the puppy.
Yeah. Well, then I don't care how you old. Have a lifetime responsibility, lifetime. Yeah.
And we and have I'm like, life for the and dog. I'm like, text me, call me. I give them all my, I'm like, this is how you can reach me literally on any platform. I don't care how big or small the issue is. I don't care if you wake me up, just, if you need to reach me, you can reach me. Is that more what you meant?
Yeah. Or just if there's any, if we don't set that relationship up with our clients, if they feel safe to contact us and technically return the dog, then there's a problem. So yeah. It is, look, I stand by and I tell my clients, if there's any ever issue or you can't keep it, it's in the contract too. And then you have these opportunities during, like we do a virtual visit at about 4 weeks old. And I talk about all of this too. Look, I'm in it for the long haul. I am here with you through the good and the bad, because it's never going to be all good. And so working with you on go home days is really important to me, that you get what you want, you need, and my puppy's voice are heard. So we're going to work together to do that. And people just feel so good about that, because this is a good thing, and that I will be here if and when there are problems. And if any time, even if it has nothing to do with the dog, I understand life gets in the way. Life happens. There are some devastating, horrific things. There's divorce, there's death, there's just, their marriage is on the brink of divorce, like whatever. And when people contact me, the first thing I always say is, absolutely, just tell me what I can do to help you. Even before they're saying they want me to take the dog back, it's always, I'm so sorry to hear that. Please tell me what I can do to help or support you. I would never want my puppy to be a burden in your home. So I am here for whatever you need.
On the genetic issue,
then it's usually another day or two, and they'll get back to me, and then we work something out. And sometimes the dog stays, and sometimes the dog comes back.
I like this, because I always see 1 year health guarantee, 1 year health guarantee. Well, I bought a dog with full breeding rights, tested her. They told me she was clear, everything, you know, and then it came back that she had hereditary cataracts. Juvenile cataracts, which wouldn't have shown up right away anyway, within a year, right? Or it depends, but so yeah, okay, I misinterpreted. You're talking about the genetic. Yeah, I need to stop genetic, talking.
Yeah, no, it's okay. And if there's genetic issues, we've had some, and then we've had some, and many of you have reached out too, like, you don't know if it's a genetic issue. you don't know because you don't really know what happened. Vets don't really know. An example I'll give you is I was contacted by a client that had a growth plate issue. She took it to the vet, took it to a specialist. They felt that it was either genetic or the dog got injured, right? Well, yeah, that'd be a growth plate issue, right? So she kept pushing, it's genetic. This dog did not get hurt here. It never fell off the couch. Never anything happened. It's genetic. And this is something I learned. So I'm going to pass it on to you because I made the decision too soon. So when you guys contact me too, I'm always like, don't make any decision right now. Just support. Say, let me know what the specialist says. Let me know what you decide to do. Let me know when you have that paperwork I can look over, right? And just keep collecting and compiling. Be open to the communication. What I did, my mistake was, is her insistence, it wore on me and I ended up refunding the puppy, right? I said, fine. She's like, I have to do the surgery now. We don't have the money, but I'm not going to give this dog back to you. I mean, it was kind of starting to turn and it shouldn't have. And I'm like, that's fine. I'll refund your money. It will pay for the surgery. Done. I got the vet paperwork after the surgery. It was not a genetic issue. It was due to an injury, a clear injury. Elbows were perfect. Hips were perfect. In fact, they were so good that that surgeon, and I got this information on the down low, the surgeon had students there in training, called them over and said, this is what a beautiful elbow looks like. This is what a perfect hip looks like. This dog was injured, period. Well, shit, there went, you know, $2,500. My saving grace is, how do I know it wasn't one of the puppies that climbed the gate and dropped over? How do I know it wasn't one of the puppies that we accidentally stepped on their foot, right? Or something, things happen. And since that day, if you have my guide, we do a clearance go home before the vet. There's a form in there. And anytime a puppy falls over a fence, accidentally gets dropped, gets stepped on, anything, chokes, you know, gags on something, we go right to that chart. It's on our clipboard. I flip to it. We have the collar colors. We make note, the date and what happened. That way, you know, like, I wish I would have had that information. I wish I could have really said, look, that dog never had an injury here. That dog was never the ones that, and not that it happens often, but sometimes things happen. And now we have documentation of that. Not that that would have changed anything. It was really still the right call just to refund her money. And frustratingly so, she still thinks, she loves to yell on social media about how she got this horrible dog. And it was due to an injury. And I have proof of that, but that's not her story. Okay, that's always going to happen. Number 8, client community. Educate your clients, both new and old, and build a cohesive, active community. Be open to feedback, both positive and negative. Checking in. What can I do to help you? Having that community. Facebook, it's one of the best things about Facebook. There's so many bad things, but one of the beautiful things about Facebook is being able to build that client community and having that private group and starting to create your culture, right? And then you'll stop getting the, well, will you take $500 for your puppy? Because that won't even be in your culture anymore. That's not even the people you'll be attracting anymore. You continue to sell your program and not your puppies. All of this is part of creating your culture. And ideally, and what I want for you is what I've had is I don't have to advertise. I still have never advertised. I am still word of mouth. So every single client that you choose to take money from and give a dog to, this is your opportunity to make sure it is one hell of an experience. It is life-changing that you make this amazing connection with them. They feel heard. They feel validated. They feel special. And then they get this really cool little puppy to complete the whole thing. And then you're still there. You're still there when they need something. And when you do that, they
and pup dates.
What's that?
And pup dates.
Pup dates, yes. Absolutely. All right. And number 10, love. Love your dogs. Love your puppies. Love your clients and change the stigma. Your passion, your program will be noticed. If you are aligning yourself to this 10-step goal, it will. We're hearing so much feedback of so many of you that have and how different your clients are already and how different your puppies are already. And it is happening. There's lots of change. And so many of you, which I'm so thrilled about, are seeing You know, we're in 2 years now. I've been mentoring for 2 years. So I have breeders that have been under my wing for 2 years, and how much the programs have changed in 2 years is truly incredible. So, and number 10, your mission. This is a really important one too. Stay true to the reason why you breed. Help others and make sure you have fun and enjoy the journey. Let's change the world and heal hearts and save lives through the power of the dog. Together, we are better. This is what you add to it. This is your value, your worth. What is your story? And why are you breeding? You know, really thinking about those things and exploring those things. What it is about dogs, number one. And what is it about the specific breed, number two, that you chose to devote your life to? Because that's what you are doing. You're devoting your life to this breed and to your puppies and to your clients. But really thinking about what ignites that passion and fire in you. Why are you doing this? This is not easy. This is 24/7. This is heart-wrenching, tragic, exhausting, isolating. Sometimes you just feel like you get beat down by the public. You get beat down by other breeders. You get beat down because the puppy died. You get beat down because your beloved dog just failed its health testing. You just get beat down. Why? Why are you doing this? Write it down. Think about it. Really mull over it if you haven't. And then really align your program to that mission. Because you're not just doing this for fun. Because while a lot of it's fun, it is hella hard. There's a reason why most breeders don't make it 5 years, because it's just sometimes devastating, especially getting a program off the ground can be incredibly difficult and lots of decisions to make. So hopefully I can help you make it easier to get your program off the ground, eliminate a lot of costly mistakes, just get you right in there with your program and your curriculum and your marketing and all of that. But really think about what your mission is, because this is where you'll connect to people. And this is what will make you stand out too. What are you passionate about? Is it a confirmation? Then go all in and make that so much of your
mission. I love you all.
Is it, you are my people. You are my tribe. And together, truly, you know, great things are going to happen. And I'm so thankful. Thank you all for being on this journey with me and trusting me with your program. I don't take that lightly. And I continue to always tell you to, when you do seek advice for somebody, what is their qualifications? How many puppies have they had? How successful are they? One thing with the dog world is some people can be very loud and very opinionated. And then when you finally get down to those questions, you find out they have no experience in that. You know, just the other day, a gal on my public social media was like, why would you advocate for puppies going home at 8 weeks old? Because I wrote that post about what I say to my puppies, you know, like, and I ended it with something like, and if you ever need me, I'll be here for you. And she was really upset that I was advocating for the puppy to go home for 8 weeks. And puppy culture says they go through this terrible fear period and they should go home till 10 weeks. And then Dr. Jane Dodd says something about vaccinating till 9. So I said, okay, that's great. So tell me your personal experience. Are you dealing with puppies that are having severe fear at 8 weeks old that makes it realistic and reasonable for you? And if she did, then that's fine. Like, but I haven't. Like, I don't see puppies experience this crazy fear period to delay them going home. So it's really interesting. The point is, sometimes it's very easy to regurgitate data or what you've been told, but then also, what have you experienced? And if there's anything I can do, it's to impress upon you and empower you to empower your puppies. For you to believe in yourself and your worth and your gift you have to raise your puppies, to stand in your own space and be proud of what you're doing, be proud of your program, be proud of your puppies, and damn it, be proud of yourself, because you are a badass. And it is time that we can and be in this professional space truly. So if that is, I can give that to you, then I have done my job truly. All right, everybody, have a great weekend. I'll see you on social media. Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Empowered Badass Breeder Podcast. Subscribe to the show so you'll never miss an episode. And while you're at it, if you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating on Apple Podcasts. Or if you'd simply tell a friend about the show, that would help us out too. You can connect with Jeanette via email at jeanette@badassbreeder.com. Talk to you next time.